KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in False Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A group of researchers have found gaps in how death certificates are maintained with implications for Native Americans' health. The Mountain West News Bureau's Caleb Radel has more.
Researchers from prestigious universities to indigenous communities studied death certificates from 2008 to 2019. They found Native Americans have a life expectancy of roughly 72 years old. The national average is 79. That's a much bigger gap than official stats show, says Jacob Bohr. He's an associate professor at the Boston University School of Public Health and the study's lead author.
American Indian populations have been subjected to deliberate policies of physical and cultural erasure for centuries. These patterns have contributed to today's economic and physical marginalization and deprivation and to poor outcomes in these populations.
Bohr and his team uncovered another problem. Death certificates for at least 40% of Native Americans failed to identify them as American Indian or Alaska Native. In most cases, their race was misreported as white. I'm Caleb Radel.
The U.S. Postal Service recently unveiled four forever stamps celebrating powwows. KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio spoke with the artist behind the collection.
The Gathering of Nations, held annually in Albuquerque, is where this new collection was released back in April.
Let's dance with good spirits. Pray with good love and energy. Here we go, Gathering of Nations powwow, Saturday night live. Make that noise, let them hear it.
These tiny pieces of postage are in part brought to life by performers Tony Duncan, his wife Violet, and their eldest child Manaya. Four designs, each honoring a different style of dance, traditional, fancy shawl, crow hop, and hoop. Now let the New Mexico-based painter who designed the Forever Stamps tell the rest of his story behind handpicking the Duncan family.
Hi, my name is Mateo Romero. I'm a tribal member from Coach Du Pueblo. I'm a contemporary Southwestern painter, and I've worked on the USPS Forever Sheet Stamp, the powwow series with the Duncan family and with Cami Jo Whiteclay. I don't know of a way where an artist could sort of catch the attention of USPS. It just happened organically. I was very flattered. I was very honored to do it. It's actually not easy to take a painting and translate it into a stamp. I did four paintings for USPS, which I think they were like 24 by 30 inches. And then to make it into something the size of your thumb, that's actually a little tricky, because it has to really carry color. But I think they did a really good job. I mean, I think the colors are clear and the shadows are nice and the faces pop out. That's really what I was trying to do, was capture the sort of visual analog of what it might be if you were at a powwow and you're looking at dancers and you could hear the sound of the drum behind you. And so I think they move in that direction where they're beginning to resonate like that, sort of give people maybe some visual cues of what it might be to actually be there. It's really their story, you know? That's the cool part about it. I mean, I'm the painter, and I've created this message, and I've put it out there. People seem to like it. But the story really is their story, right? It's their family and their energy. They actually, in this respect, have become the face of powwow. This moment to the world.
That was Mateo Romero. The story was produced by Gabriel Pietrazio, and I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by AARP. AARP creates and connects people to unique tools and programs, helps conserve personal resources, and tackles issues that matter most to individuals, families, and communities. More at AARP.org.
Skugtash. For more than 40 years, Ramona Farms has revived ancient traditional foods. Tepary beans, pinoli, polentas, and more, all from store.ramonafarms.com. Ramona Farms supports this show. Omye.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
I don't think anybody, even ourselves as long-term legislators, have a full understanding of what those impacts could be as they trickle down the entire economy.
State lawmakers speak out against the congressional budget bill. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, June 27th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, advocates fear that a public land sale would fail to increase the housing supply.
It's more likely that that's going to allow for building new mansions and second homes for people from out of state.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Public media is about you, the community we serve. Thank you for tuning in.
Make your impact at the University of Alaska Anchorage. UAA is a leading workforce provider offering you a path to the career you want, with over 100 academic programs for you to choose from, an array of in-person, online, and hybrid course options, and resources to help you succeed on your journey. UAA is what you're looking for. Apply today. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Anchorage.
Some key Alaska state legislators are pushing back on the Republican budget package known as the, quote, Big Beautiful Bill. In a New York Times opinion piece today, the state House Speaker and Senate Majority Leader say the tax and spending cuts package would throw budgets for rural states like Alaska into chaos. Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports.
With U.S. Senate votes coming soon, Republican State Senate Majority Leader Kathy Geisel says she and Independent House Speaker Bryce Edgman see now is the time to ring the alarm bells.
Bryce and I were astonished and dismayed at what we're seeing Congress looking at doing to our Medicaid program.
Roughly one in three Alaskans has Medicaid coverage, and Edgman, who represents Bristol Bay and other Southwest Alaska communities as an independent, says the program props up communities throughout rural Alaska.
It's so interwoven as a whole into our entire economy out here, everything from air taxis to restaurants to transportation to certainly healthcare itself.
The New York Times piece he co-authored with Geisel is headlined, Alaska Cannot Survive This Bill. Edgman says changes to Medicaid and the federal food stamp program known as SNAP could push some families into bankruptcy and leave others without enough food on the table. Edgman and Geisel write that cuts to SNAP could force village grocery stores to close.
The SNAP program is, I'd characterize as one of the sleeper programs in Alaska because it does provide a lot of benefits to people that sort of escapes, you know, maybe the average person's comprehension of how important it is.
SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, pays for food for 70,000 low-income Alaskans. All the money for that food currently comes from the federal government. But the House-passed version of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act would, for the first time, require states to pay part of the cost of benefits. A Senate proposal would push up Alaska's SNAP cost by roughly $50 million, according to data Geisel shared from the State Division of Public Assistance. The status of that provision in the Senate bill is in flux. It was recently stripped out of the bill under the rules the Senate is using to avoid a filibuster, but Republican leaders say they plan to push it back in. Geisel says the changes couldn't come at a worse time for Alaska's already stressed state budget. Lawmakers approved an austere spending plan this year as low oil prices sent them scrambling.
It's going to be hard to find that money. How much more are we going to cut from the Department of Transportation? How much more are we going to cut from the Department of Corrections? How much more are we going to have to reduce our commitment to education?
The impact of Medicaid changes on the state budget is less clear. The House-passed version of the bill would reduce federal spending on Alaskans' health care by roughly $200 million a year. That's according to the Kaiser Family Foundation. Geisel argues that would force some costs indirectly onto state and local employees' health insurance, since more uninsured Alaskans would forego primary care and instead show up at emergency rooms. Federal law requires them to treat everyone, even if they can't pay. Defenders of the tax and spending cuts package say opponents vastly overstate the impacts on Alaska's budget. Much of the projected loss in Medicaid spending is linked to a proposed work requirement for adults without children. But the most recent Senate draft has exemptions for Alaska Native people covered by the Indian Health Service, people with serious mental health conditions, including substance abuse, and people living in areas where jobs are few and far between. House Minority Leader Mia Costello, an Anchorage Republican, said in a statement that the bill, quote, protects our most vulnerable while ensuring benefits are targeted and sustainable. But Giesel, who is a nurse practitioner, questions whether Alaskans would truly benefit from the bill's carve-outs.
What does it take to get an exemption? It takes someone applying for that exemption. And I can tell you that people applying right now, even for Medicaid benefits, are waiting months.
Another Republican legislative leader, Senate Minority Leader Mike Schauer of Wasilla, accused Giesel and Edgman of fear-mongering. He questioned the pair's commitment to reining in costs in the state budget. The bill is likely to span hundreds of pages, and Edgman says the race to pass the fast-changing bill by the president's July 4th deadline makes it hard to anticipate the consequences.
And I don't think anybody, even ourselves as long-term legislators, have a full understanding of what those impacts could be as they trickle down the entire economy.
He and Giesel closed their opinion piece in the Times saying the bill is, quote, risking our way of life to give money to the rich. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
A mandate to sell millions of acres of public land was struck from the Republican budget reconciliation bill moving through the U.S. Senate. That's after the Senate parliamentarian ruled on Monday that the public land sales did not clearly affect the budget. But as KFSK's Olivia Rose and KTOO's Alex Solomon report, some parcels of land might make it back into the bill.
2 days before the parliamentarian's ruling, dozens of people gathered on a remote Prince of Wales Island beach to send a message to lawmakers, taking a picture with a large wooden board painted with three red words, not for sale.
When we were holding that sign, I think we all felt upset, you know, upset that this was happening for reasons that we didn't understand.
Elsa Sebastian lives in a small community near Port Protection. It's a remote area surrounded by the flora and fauna of the Tongass National Forest. And she says that's why people live here.
It's our way of life. It's being able to continue to hunt and fish and play and explore and like find ourselves in these places.
Sebastian says the lack of public engagement from lawmakers felt like a betrayal of trust, and privatizing parts of the Tongass would significantly affect rural communities like hers.
We need ultimate transparency when it comes to decisions around our public lands.
U.S. Senator Mike Lee, a Utah Republican, added the proposal to the mega bill that would have required the U.S. Forest Service and Bureau of Land Management to sell off roughly 2 to 3 million acres of land across the West. National parks, monuments, and other protected lands were excluded, but millions of acres in Alaska could have been eligible for those sales, including sections of the Tongass and Chugach National Forests and parts of the interior. Republicans said selling the land would allow it to be developed into affordable housing, but much of the identified public lands are unsuited for housing development. The Senate parliamentarian decided that this mandate breaks a rule ensuring that reconciliation bills like this one focus on fiscal issues and not unrelated policy changes, so the section was struck down. But lawmakers are rewriting the proposal to include just BLM lands near towns.
Senator Murkowski's communications director Joe Plesha said Wednesday that bill language is currently evolving, but that the new focus is on selling public lands purely for housing, and that this would include a review process. According to reporting from The Hill, somewhere between 600,000 and 1.2 million acres of BLM land would now be for sale nationwide. The Forest Service and BLM declined to comment on pending legislation, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which manages the Forest Service, did not respond. Kate Glover is a Juneau-based attorney at Earth Justice, an environmental law firm. She says the Forest Service and BLM already have the authority to sell or exchange land under current laws.
But in those cases, the agencies have to take a look at the public interest and decide whether it makes sense to sell the land or not.
She says what's different about a mandate is that it would require sales, whether they are in the public interest or not. Also, Glover says that selling steep and rugged public lands won't solve the affordable housing problem because many of those areas are not connected to existing infrastructure.
It's more likely that that's going to allow for building new mansions and second homes for people from out of state.
Josh Hicks is the director of conservation campaigns for the Wilderness Society in Denver, Colorado. The environmental group published a map showing swaths of land that could qualify for sales under the original bill, fueling an outcry on social media. Hicks says that the idea of selling off public lands is widely unpopular.
We're seeing people from across this political spectrum in opposition to this proposal. A lot of folks in the sporting community who go and hunt and fish on our public lands absolutely are rising up.
Some Republican representatives from Colorado, Idaho, and Montana even spoke out against the sell-off. Congressman Nick Begich, who voted for the bill in the House, did not respond to a request for comment. Senator Dan Sullivan, who has indicated support for public land sales in Alaska, also did not respond. Amendments to the bill have not yet been made public, and it's unclear whether revised public land sales will be approved by the parliamentarian. Senate Republicans are aiming to vote on the bill by July 4. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
And in Petersburg, I'm Olivia Rose.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, an Anchorage drag queen looks forward to this year's Pride celebrations.
Pride is where you can go to feel less shameful, more affirmed and supported. Absolutely.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska Pacific University offers a variety of personalized and relevant hands-on degree programs with close mentorship from exceptional faculty. At APU, students are the core of a tight-knit and supportive community invested in their academic success. Education is collaborative, innovative, and transformational, encouraging student development and honoring Indigenous heritage. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University.
Alaska Governor Mike Dunleavy issued a disaster declaration Thursday for the Denali Borough after wildfires destroyed homes and hampered transportation there. The Bear Creek Fire, the largest in the area so far, forced at least 75 people to evacuate, and it destroyed at least 17 structures, six of them residential. Here's Denali Borough Mayor Chris Knoll.
The damage assessment is ongoing.
The disaster declaration will support the borough's response to the fire and open up state relief funds for displaced residents, according to the State Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. Knoll says the fire also caused power outages and cell service interruptions. Firefighters were working to protect homes and roads in the area and stop the fire from moving farther north. Pilot cars could continue to escort drivers along the park's highway for a week or longer. Several major fires north of Fairbanks also remained active today. Jessica Farrakane is with the incident management team from the Southwest region. She says the Himalaya Road fire has not damaged any structures yet.
The Himalaya Road fire is the big priority fire. They're all important, but this one is very close to home.
While the evacuation levels for the fires north of Fairbanks were dropped Thursday, officials warned that conditions could quickly worsen as the weather warms. Sam Harrell with the Alaska Division of Forestry and Fire Protection says fire crews are also working on fires near Salcha, Tok, and Delta Junction, among other locations.
We're coming back into sunny and warm days, and fires across the interior region are becoming more active.
Weather forecasts say thunderstorms are also possible over the next few days. The Australian company seeking to develop a large oil discovery on Alaska's North Slope might be purchased by a consortium based in Abu Dhabi. The Alaska Beacon reports Santos announced earlier this month that XRG PJSC, a subsidiary of Abu Dhabi National Oil Co., has made a buyout offer. Santos owns 51% of the Pikka prospect on the western North Slope, which, if developed, would produce up to 80,000 barrels of oil a day. The field holds about 400 million barrels of oil, and Santos in 2022 issued its formal approval to proceed to project development. Aside from its shares of Pikka, Santos has part ownership of another oil property on the North Slope. It owns a 25% share of the Sockeye prospect on the eastern North Slope, where a discovery was announced in March. If the acquisition by XRG PJSC goes through, the impacts to the Alaska projects are yet to be determined.
Thank you.
federal bill that would likely include cuts to Medicaid passed the U.S. House and is being considered by the Senate. A Klukwan mother and son who could be negatively affected if the bill passes traveled 3,500 miles to Washington, D.C. and joined other families of children with intense medical needs to protest the bill. KHNS's Melinda Munson spoke with the pair about their trip and their concerns.
Means man who grows fast, or even not to.
This is Klukwan resident and soon to be eighth grader David Anthony Hotch, giving the Tlingit introduction he had prepared for when he met Alaska lawmakers. David was born with a genetic condition that has required multiple surgeries throughout his life, as well as expensive medications and other medical interventions. He is insured by Medicaid.
Medicaid is like very important because it gets me the medicine I need to have an actual life, not just be cooped up in my house 24 hours.
David has done advocacy work with the group Little Lobbyists, which started in 2017 to help protect the Affordable Care Act. This time, Little Lobbyists asked David to join around 24 youth at the Capitol, speaking out against the Big Beautiful Bill. Among other things, the legislation seeks to cut $880 billion from a part of the budget that includes Medicaid. David's mom, Maggie Hotch, says Medicaid has been a lifeline for their family. Ironically, when David was born, Maggie and her husband both had medical insurance. But even double insurance wasn't enough to cover the steep price of healthcare for a chronic condition.
So it has taken us over a decade to recover financially as a family from the medical debt that we incurred, even when we both had insurance.
Medicaid covers David's treatments, his travel to doctor visits, and provides in-home caregiver services. Mother and son say any cuts to Medicaid would be detrimental. This was the message Maggie Hotch wanted to deliver in person.
Unfortunately, we were not able to meet with the senators themselves, but we did meet with their staffers and share our perspective. I really think it would be catastrophic for Alaska's entire healthcare system if they were to cut Medicaid funding from anyone.
Besides being David's mom, Maggie is an occupational therapist serving Haines, Klukwan, Juneau, and Skagway. She has a waitlist for clients and is worried about rural communities, which tend to rely on Medicaid coverage.
If they continue with these proposed cuts, we would likely have to shut down services to three of those four communities. Juneau would likely be the only place where we would be able to have enough revenue from private insurance companies to remain open.
Alaska relies on Medicaid in a big way. About 38% of Alaskans were enrolled in Medicaid last year, according to the state's Department of Health. And Alaska Public Media says only one other state, New Mexico, has a greater percentage of its population enrolled in Medicaid. In Skagway, I'm Melinda Munson.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
IBEW's path to success includes excellent training, good wages, benefits, and a comfortable retirement. Join the IBEW and build a bright future. Call 907-575-7285 to find out more. This message sponsored by IBEW Local 1547.
Make your impact at the University of Alaska Anchorage. UAA is a leading workforce provider offering you a path to the career you want, with over 100 academic programs for you to choose from, an array of in-person, online, and hybrid course options, and resources to help you succeed on your journey. UAA is what you're looking for. Apply today. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Anchorage.
The fate of the Juneau School District's Universal Free Breakfast Program remains uncertain after the Board of Education delayed a decision yesterday. The board will instead consider it against a list of staff positions and programs it may add to the budget following a higher increase to state education funding than anticipated. Nicole Herbert is the district's chief financial officer. She told board members at a meeting earlier this month that some districts saw an 8% drop in participation after free meal programs from the COVID-19 pandemic ended. She says it's likely fewer students will get school breakfast if the district starts charging for it.
Since Juneau's been providing universal free breakfast, I think a little bit longer than that, it's safe to say that we could probably see a bigger than 8% drop. but that's kind of an unknown factor going into this.
A daily average of about 600 students ate school breakfast this year. District data from the past two school years shows the number of students eating breakfast at most Juneau schools has declined. Herbert estimates continuing to offer free breakfast next school year would cost the district more than $220,000. She says one way to reduce the cost is to get more students approved for free and reduced meals. The district gets federal reimbursements for students who qualify for free and reduced lunch. The process generally requires families to apply for the program. The board expects to meet on July 9th to discuss what to add to its budget, including universal free breakfast. Alaska's Interlibrary Loan Program, an 800 number that was slated to end next week, will continue for at least another year. The program allows rural residents to access books and DVDs that smaller libraries may not have the budget or space for. It's funded annually by the Institute of Museum and Library Services, an independent agency of the federal government. President Donald Trump targeted the agency for cuts through an executive order in March. The move sent libraries around the state scrambling to preserve the program that serves about 70 rural Alaska libraries each year. But in May, a federal judge temporarily stopped the administration from dismantling the agency. Alaska libraries were notified this month that IMLS funding was approved through next year. Sandy Nipmeyer runs the 800 hotline out of the Anchorage Public Library. She says more than 4,000 materials were requested through the program last year.
This is a benefit for everybody in the state. You want these small towns to be inquisitive, interesting, smart people, and the 800 number helps to provide that because of the access to materials that they have.
Virginia Morgan directs the library in Cooper Landing. It's one of a handful on the Kenai Peninsula that uses the program. When the program stopped taking requests earlier this year, she says patrons drove to other libraries to find what they were looking for.
This is just the perfect way for us to put those items in the hands of people when we don't have the space for everything, nor do we have the funds to purchase everything.
Morgan says since the program started taking requests again, she's called in about once a day. The program is currently funded through fall 2026. Well, Anchorage is celebrating Pride this weekend with a parade, drag shows, queer movie nights, and an all-day festival at the city's Park Strip. But as Alaska Public Media's Hannah Floor reports, one Anchorage drag queen says the usual joy of Pride is mixed with fear, anger, and sadness in the face of LGBTQ-targeted legislation around the country.
Golden Delicious is gluing tiny rhinestones to spandex.
If anyone says bedazzling, they're not most likely a drag performer. Just saying.
The correct term, they say, is stoning. Golden Delicious is the alter ego of Brooks Banker. But in or out of drag, they say most people know them as Goldie. They've been performing for the better part of two decades, lip-syncing ballads and hosting drag events as a self-described bearded, big-bodied beauty queen. Right now they're on their living room couch, working their way down the calf of a custom neon catsuit in tropical print. They don't make new looks for every performance.
Oh my God, no. Who has the closet space for that?
Their second bedroom is already packed, racks bowed under the weight of so many costumes. But this weekend is Pride, so of course they're going to spend 6 hours stoning a look with a remake of Dallas on in the background. Goldie says Pride is always an opportunity to try out new outfits and new performances, to really sink into the excitement and joy of being with their queer community, celebrating who they are. They say that desire to celebrate identity comes partly from an all too common childhood experience of shame.
The teasing that would happen happens to a more feminine little boy. People telling you you're weird, or you, even as a child, you catch and recognize the side glances, you know, from the people around you.
They have an early memory, always stealing their sister's pink tutu at 3 and 4 years old. Goldie says their dad would take it away, put it on the top shelf of a closet. That early reaction made them realize they were different. They say Pride can be a pushback against the shame that comes partly from people disapproving of the way queer kids express themselves.
If you're somebody who hasn't had that community initially, haven't felt affirmed in who you are, has only ever experienced shame
or bigotry in that identity. Pride is where you can go to feel less shameful, more affirmed and supported. Absolutely.
But this year, they say, Pride feels different. Policies around the country that target LGBTQ people make Goldie feel less safe in daily life. Last week, the Supreme Court upheld state bans on transgender care for minors. In January, the Trump administration issued executive orders banning transgender people in the military and rolling back LGBTQ workplace protections. The American Civil Liberties Union is tracking nearly 600 anti-LGBTQ bills around the country.
It's nerve-wracking. There's anxiety around, you know, getting in my car and driving in, like, drag makeup, for instance. I don't feel comfortable doing my makeup here and even driving while in face.
Goldie loves getting into a look at home in their drag room, surrounded by all the glitter and flounce. But that doesn't happen much anymore. Instead, they do it all at the venue. Nearly 2 hours of makeup, then the wig, the outfit, and always last, the press-on nails. After the show, they'll use coconut oil and hand soap to take it all off before they leave. They say they're not just fearful for their own safety. They worry about the people in the community they love. And that fear has changed their aesthetic a little bit, too. In the past, rainbows were never really their vibe. But lately, they've started to embrace the symbol of queer pride.
I wanted to bring that imagery of safety, of a safe space, of a community in my drag a bit more. And so I might do a song in a rainbow dress that relates to, you know, loving yourselves. Like I might do Beautiful by Christina Aguilera.
Just a few hours before the show, Goldie was still stoning the neon catsuit. They sent a text message. It'll be done for tonight. And it was.
Clap louder because it's golden delicious, everybody!
Goldie wove through the crowd, singing along to Sabrina Carpenter, sparkling in full-length pinks and yellows and blues with a flippy little waist ruffle and big hair. And then another look. This time, a leopard print catsuit with pink harnesses, flirting with the crowd to the Backstreet Boys. I want it in Anchorage, I'm Hannah Floor.
And the Anchorage Pride Parade is tomorrow, starting at 11:30 a.m. on the Delaney Park Strip. The Pride Festival goes until 5 p.m. at Delaney Park, and Mad Myrnas is hosting a big pink party at 9 p.m. tonight and a Pride after party tomorrow. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Eric Stone, Alex Solomon, and Jamie Deep in Juneau, Iona Niden and Hannah Floor in Anchorage, Hunter Morrison in Kenai, and Melinda Munson in Skagway. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky's our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Princess Lodges, offering glass-domed railcar tours to Talkeetna and Denali National Park for Alaska summer adventures. Your journey begins at princesslodges.com.
And by
the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.
I got my toes in the water, in the sand, not a worry in the world, a cold beer in my hand. Life is good today. Life is good today. Well, a plane touched down just about 3 o'clock, and the city's still on my mind. bikinis and palm trees danced in my head. I was still in a baggage line. Concrete cars with their own prison bars, like this life I'm living in. But the plane brought me farther. I'm surrounded by water and I'm not going back again. I got my toes in the water, in the sand. Not a worry in the world, a cold beer in my hand. Life is good today, life is good today. Adios and bye, con Dios. Yeah, I'm leaving GA. And if it weren't for tequila and pretty senoritas, I'd have no reason to stay. Adios and bye, con Dios. Yeah, I'm leaving GA. Gonna lay in the hot sun and roll a big fat one and grab my guitar and play. The 4 days flew by like a drunk Friday night as summer drew to an end. They can't believe that I just couldn't leave, and I bid adieu to my friends. 'Cause my bartender, she's from the islands, her body's been kissed by the sun. And coconut replaces the smell of the bar, and I don't know if it's her or the rum. I got my toes in the water, in the sand, not a worry in the world, a cold beer in my hand. Life is good today, life is good today. Adios and bye, con Dios. A long way from GA. Yes, and all the muchachas, they call me Big Papa when I throw pesos their way. Adios and bye, con Dios. A long way from GA. Someone do me a favor and pour me some Jaeger, and I'll grab my guitar and play. Adios and bye, con Dios. Going home now to stay. The senoritas don't care when there's no dinero. Yeah, I got no money to stay. Adios and bye, con Dios. Going home now to stay. Just gonna prop up by the lake and put my in a lawn chair, toes in the clay. Not a worry in the world, a PBR on the way. Life is good today, life is good today.
Small. one time and last for a lifetime and never let go till we're gone. Love was when I loved you one true time. I hold you in my life, will always go on. Near, far, wherever you are, I believe that the heart does go on.
there's something about a man in black. Makes me wanna buy a Cadillac, throw the top back, and roll down to Jacksontown. I wanna be there on the stage with you. You and I could be the next rage to hear the crowd roar, make them want more, or kick the footlights out. I wanna love like Johnny.
still.